Log Talk Radio.
You know, Andrew Socek, I'm not a genius here, and I'm not going to profess that I know everything, but it would seem to me if Eddie Edwards and Sami Callihan were going to have a match in a House of Hardcore ring, that Sami Callihan wouldn't necessarily have to have a job in Impact Wrestling. But that's the story they're telling. Sami Callihan, if you missed it, he attacked Don Callis last weekend in an indie show. That was the central theme of this week's edition of Impact Wrestling. They had a meeting going on throughout the show. We finally saw towards the end that Eddie Edwards was begging for Sami Callihan to be not fired, to have him keep his job so that he could have a match with him next week in House of Hardcore. So that is the storyline they're trying to play up. But am I alone in thinking, hey, it's a little weird, you know, they could just like have a match in House of Hardcore? He doesn't necessarily have to keep his job for that to happen.
No, you are completely right on that one. I have no idea what they're doing with this storyline right now. They were going somewhere and then they just ran it into the ground tonight, or just went back a few chapters and started writing a completely different book. It was very frustrating, I feel, to watch.
Yeah, I don't know what they were doing with a couple of decisions tonight. We're going to talk about it here on the PW Torch Livecast. It is Thursday, May 10th, 2018. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. Let's kind of start with this Sami Callihan storyline, and then we'll get into the world title match that I wanted to talk about as well. But let's start with the Callihan, Eddie Edwards, Don Callis story and kind of the repercussions of it, because that was the central theme of the show, like we said. And one of the big things that it caused was Josh Matthews flying solo on commentary tonight. And that's a very difficult thing to do. Like, I'm not trying to make light of it and say that, you know, it wasn't a hard proposition having to go solo for 2 hours on TV by yourself. But to me, the fact that they just put Callis on commentary a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, 4 weeks ago, to remove him so quickly, even though this is only in storyline, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Don Callis on commentary next week, but to remove him so quickly felt very abrupt, and I thought it made the show suffer, because Josh Matthews, look, like I said, he did the best he could by himself. That's a hard thing to do, but there were several portions of the show tonight where I felt like it lacked emotion, and I'm putting a lot of that on Josh Matthews. And I think part of it, too, was they were playing into, I think he was playing into the severity of that Sami Callihan, Don Callis story in wanting to be a little more reserved, because he would talk about it every single segment. And that's kind of what it felt like. That's what I think he was going for. But, you know, I thought especially when you look at the four-way match with Phantasma, Aerostar, Drago, and I can't recall who the fourth person was.
It's not popping into my mind either.
It was Aerostar. Well, it was Phantasma.
Phantasma.
Oh, and Ishimori. When you had that four-way, you know, that was a really good match. It went 17 minutes. There was a lot of big spots in that match, and I just thought that Josh was lifeless. And again, I think part of it was he was trying to play up the Callihan storyline, but there were several portions in the show tonight where I don't know if you just get tired doing 2 hours by yourself or whatever the case was, or if they were trying to play into the seriousness of that other storyline. But there were just multiple segments tonight where it felt like the show had no heartbeat at all. You know, and am I alone in that, or did you pick up on that as well?
No, I just overall, this episode was awful. I mean, and part of that was due to the commentary. I know they tried to, you know, I'm sure he was produced that way. Like, okay, be really serious the entire night. Don Callis might be really hurt and Callihan might get fired. But I mean, come on. Like, when do they ever do that for a wrestler? If a wrestler gets hurt, they don't do that for 2 hours. I mean, okay, think of this. Like, last week, Rosemary is dead they didn't even mention that tonight.
Literally.
And they didn't. Yeah, they did not pretend she was dead throughout the entire show. They weren't somber about that. But Don Callis getting attacked and Callahan being fired, that drags down the entire show. Awful. Yeah, I'm like worked up about this, how bad this was tonight.
Yeah, and it was, you know, like you said, the commentary, and we've been on this for over a year, but the commentary was kind of the one thread that I thought brought the show down overall. Mm-hmm. Was just the lack of emotion in commentary, and we've been critical of that, you know, back when it was Jeremy Borash especially. But I guess that's the best comparison to make. Like, it felt like Josh was a little Jeremy Borash tonight, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. There was other parts about this show that felt Borash-like too. I just don't know what they were doing, why they thought that would be the best route, why they chose to have that angle overshadow everything. You know, I was looking through some kind of old Callis interviews tonight, and he was saying, like, I don't want to be an authority figure. Like, that's over with. I was tired of that 13 years ago. Well, tonight he basically was an authority figure, and the entire show revolved around him and not the world title match. And it ruined the entire Callahan storyline. You know, I'll just go into this right now. Like, last week we had all these callers coming in, like, hey, where do you think this angle is headed with Eddie Edwards? And we were speculating, like, oh, maybe he'll join OVE. Well, tonight they proved he was right the entire time. I mean, they had this angle going like he's going too far, but Callahan switched back and he's already attacked the boss.
Yeah.
So
right when it looked like they were trying to go babyface with Callahan too.
Yeah. So had we said like last week, well, I think this angle will end with Don Callis getting beat up and then Sami Callahan going right back to his nefarious ways, like that would have been ridiculous. But that's the route they chose for this.
Yeah, it's weird. The timing of it seems really strange, especially where, like you said, just last week, it felt like they were going heel with Eddie Edwards and they were going babyface with Sami Callahan. I mean, there was a lot of sympathy on Sami Callahan last week. And then the way it played out tonight was almost like that was completely forgotten. You know, what did Sami Callahan want to say to Alicia Edwards in the hospital? Like, that was never even brought up. And I don't think that there was ever that storyline, that loose end was never really tied up, because Eddie Edwards attacked Callahan in the hospital and that was the end of it. You know, so we never really found out what he needed to say or what he wanted to say to Alicia Edwards in the hospital. And that was kind of just dropped and forgotten about because, like you said, Callahan's apparently out of the hospital now and attacking the boss, when the boss had nothing to do with the storyline. I mean, there was Don Callis wasn't even presented as one of the people in charge. He was kind of presented as just the way Vince McMahon was in like the early 90s. He's just a commentator. And, you know, they had alluded to it a couple of times, I think, when Callis was on commentary. But it's not like he was a central part of the storyline, or even he wasn't even a minor character in the storyline. Like, he had nothing to do with it at all. And then all of a sudden this weekend had a lot to do with it, and there was no explanation on why. And then I just thought it really fell through when you have Eddie Edwards begging for Sami Callahan to have his job just so that they can have a match. I mean, if this is such a personal feud, Eddie Edwards shouldn't need Sami Callahan to be employed in order to fight him. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like if you see two guys that get into a fight at a bar, you know, they're not begging their boss to hire the person just so that they can fight. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you could just have it out wherever you are. So I thought that where they went with the story just had not only the holes of the stuff they left behind last week, but then the new plot lines that they were starting within this storyline this week just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing for me is that, you know, the last era, you couldn't get emotionally invested into any storyline during the Jeff Jarrett era because, well, it was awful and Jarrett was having his own problems. But like this era, I think a lot of people had hope, like, yes, I can finally get emotionally invested into these characters. And tonight it's just like, not really. You know, we'll just change directions whenever we feel like it, because as far as I can tell, there's no real life reason why they needed to rush this and change everything up. So just really disappointing to see. And I have no idea what they were thinking by just going this direction in general.
The other thing that it kind of resulted in was the world title match. To me, it felt like it was shoehorned into the show. You know, that's a match that should be built up. It's the world title. I mean, that's something they've done a pretty good job with of building up and making feel important. And here tonight, it just felt like it was being shoehorned into a show that had so much other stuff on it. Not all of it was good stuff, but it's just so much other stuff on it that the fact that you had a guy cashing in his Feast or Fired opportunity for the world title, the match just, yeah, it was the main event, but it was 6 minutes and it was over and done with pretty quickly. I don't think it needed to be on the show. Like, it almost felt like that would have been something you would have rather saved for next week and give them 15 minutes to have an actual match. I mean, the whole idea of Eli Drake beating Moose for the world title shot briefcase and then losing in 6 minutes a couple of weeks later, I just don't understand why they gave him the briefcase to begin with. Like, why put it on Eli Drake if you're just going to have him lose in 6 minutes 2 or 3 weeks later? It just doesn't make any sense. And then to also at the same time shoehorn it into this show with so much other stuff going on, it's just going to be something that's forgotten about, I think, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, exactly. I had written that down in my notes. Like, what was the grand plan at one point? Because, yeah, Moose looks like an idiot now because he gave that up and he lost. Eli Drake looks like a crappy wrestler now because he can't hang 6 minutes with Pentagon. Pentagon's a great wrestler, but they are not treating him like a major star. They're not doing all these cool promos like they did at Redemption. He's just a guy, basically, at this point in the company. And, yeah, they just, you know, Eli Drake is one of their top five guys, and he just, you know, lost in very short order. And once again, if you got emotionally invested in where is this storyline with the Feaster Fired briefcase going, well, nowhere. It's done.
I mean, it seems to me, and we'll see how it plays out, one of the things that you and I always tell listeners is that we don't look ahead at spoilers, and we don't. But one of the things that it made me think of right away was, okay, they gave Eli Drake the briefcase. He was going to challenge for the world title, and maybe the original plan was he was going to win the world title, but now they got to Orlando for this last set of television tapings, and for whatever reason, they don't think they're going to be able to re-sign him, so they just needed to get the briefcase off of him as quickly as possible so they can move on to something else. If that's the case, you know, obviously shame on them for lack of planning and giving him the briefcase without being able to get a new deal done. And who knows? I mean, that's just speculation on my part. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it's the first thing that I thought of was, okay, something must have changed here. What is a big thing that could change? Well, Eli Drake's contract is supposedly up this summer, and maybe there were plans for him to do something, and then they found out at some point over the course of that tapings that, hey, he wasn't going to resign. So now they've got this briefcase on him, and they just got to get a match over and done with. I mean, that's really what this felt like. It wasn't anything special. It just felt like a match they needed to get over. They needed to just get done and get it over with. And that's really how it came across.
Yeah, agreed on that as well. But even if that's, yeah, even if that is the case, they should have been building it up more throughout the night. They could have held off even at, you know, a couple more weeks to make this feel like a huge deal, make Eli Drake seem like a huge star. So if Pentagon's going to stick around, then, well, he beat one of their top stars. Make it seem like a huge deal, but they didn't do any of that. It just felt very, thrown together. It's almost like they just wanted to get it over with.
It almost felt like they wanted us to forget about it, honestly.
Yeah, it was a really strange thing.
Yeah, and who knows if Pentagon is sticking around or not. I mean, I guess it's possible that Drake and Pentagon could both be done, you know, with the company after this.
Yeah.
So maybe that is the case. And if that's the case, then yeah, I would understand from a booking perspective why you'd want to get the match over with and you'd want people to forget about it. But we don't know. I mean, we don't know. And there's still plenty of weeks between now and Slammiversary and a lot of TV in the can that they're going to be showing over the next month or so, a little more than a month. But if either of these guys are sticking around long term, this match just doesn't make any sense to me. Because I don't think it helped either of them.
No, I don't think so either. Just not enough hype. It wasn't good. Matthews was still distracted by talking about Callahan and Don Callis. At that point, I just wanted to be like, shut up. Shut up about it. A match that's not even happening in their promotion. Just baffling. I mean, the world title was devalued because of this. And, you know, all the goodwill, all the buzz they had from Redemption, completely gone. Just a complete mess of a final segment and a complete mess of a show.
You can give us a call, 515-605-9345. We've got a lot of people on hold. You just got to remember, if you want to get on the call or get into the caller queue, you just got to hit the number 1 when you're on hold, and that's going to let us know that you want to get on the air. If you just dial the number and you're listening to us talk and you haven't hit the number 1, we're not going to know that you want to get on the air. But we got a lot of callers lined up, so we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get to the phone calls here on the PW Torch Livecast on a Thursday.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conference and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch live cast. Let's get right to the phone calls. And Kylan in New Jersey is first this week. Kylan, how are you?
He promised. All right.
He did. Hello, Kylan? You know what? For some reason, Kylan's number is up here twice. So let's try the other one. Put that one back on hold, and let's try this one. Kylan, can you hear us on this line?
Yes, I can, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
A little rough.
Yeah, a little rough this week. I mean, not as grumpy as I think we probably should be, but okay.
Yeah, that was a slog.
Yep.
Yeah, it felt like a long 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've definitely had better weeks.
I don't think there's any question there. Yeah.
In an interesting bit of news, before we get to my questions for this week, I would like to let you guys know that former Impact Knockout Ava Story worked last night's WWE NXT tapings in an enhancement match against new NXT female wrestler Lacey Evans.
All right. Yeah, no, that is it. I had actually read that earlier today. So, yeah, we'll see if she can earn herself a contract. I mean, that seems to be the first step in the process for a lot of people.
Yeah. Lady Tapa couldn't do it.
That's true. She couldn't. And her uncle is the Barbarian. So you know something probably went wrong there. So, my first question for this week is in regards to the Impact Tag Division. Were the team of DJ Z and Andrew Everett booked to win tonight simply to get a new tag team onto the roster, or because Impact management has serious plans for this.
I think it's probably a combination of both. I mean, I think they were trying to accomplish the getting the new team over, and I do think that they're going to book them as a team. I mean, if you looked at their gear tonight, like the gear was the same, and I think it was last week too. So they've got matching gear. They've got the name Z and E. You know, it sounds like that this is going to be an act they're going to go with, which they might as well. I mean, they're not doing anything with either guy as singles. And then I think it was twofold. I think it was to get the new team over, and they're also in the middle of telling the story with LAX of the fact that, hey, Konnan is missing. We don't know where he is. And LAX is struggling to win matches with Konnan gone. So I think it was twofold. It gives them a big win over an established tag team to kind of start their run. And it continues the LAX story of they're losing matches because Konnan's not there. Andrew, what did you read on that? Because I thought that was a pretty good match, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, that was my same thought as well, that it was used to further along the LAX storyline. But I think they will stick together as a tag team, if only because there are only really like three tag teams in the company. I think they got a lot of potential, but I wish they would have just taken out an enhancement talent team right away. Just, you know, I'm just not really buying into this LAX suddenly sucks because Konnan's there. So they can't, you know, their best tag team in the past year can't beat a first time tag team. I never like that in wrestling. So, you know, might just be me, but I think they will stick around for some time.
Exactly what you just said, Andrew, is exactly why I made up the question.
Oh. Right on.
Question number two is on seemingly dropped angles. What do you suppose is the idea behind re-teaming Joseph Park with Grado after the Jeff Jarrett Dutch Mantel management team had previously broken them up with the whole illegal immigrant angle for Grado and had Joseph Park stealing money from Grado the last time they were actually seen?
That is a great question, and I have absolutely no idea. You know, I don't know if it's just was done as a way to introduce Katarina or what, but yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. I have no clue. It feels very similar. I mean, it's almost the same. It's the same thing they were doing. How long ago was that? 6 months ago?
Not even, I think. Yeah. Probably about that then, actually.
I mean, it's the same stuff. I just don't understand why they're doing it again.
I think just Scott D'Amore has a really cheesy, dumb sense of humor. I mean, like, honestly, why else bring it back? He's the only link here. And there, it's also later in the night, they did the Falaba KM training skits, which were very similar to the Joseph Park.
My God.
Yeah, Jeremy Borash skit. It's like, come on.
Terrible.
Yeah, I'm also very annoyed with this that they brought back Winter, a two-time Knockouts champion, pretend it's not Winter,
yeah,
and that it's Katarina. Like, that is so incredibly stupid.
I hate that.
Just to bring her back for a comedy role, like, and ignore their own history, just complete garbage.
That drives me crazy too. You've got to acknowledge your own history. I mean, I know. Yeah, it happens in other television shows where actors or actresses will come back and play a different role. But, you know, this, it's a little different in wrestling, I think, because they're supposedly playing themselves, right? You know, the one, this is going to be a weird analogy, but the one that I can think of right now that's a little similar is like ABC just rebooted Roseanne, right? The sitcom from like the 90s. And the older daughter in that show was played by two different actresses. So one of them is had returned to this new incarnation of the show as a different character, but it's 10 years later, if not – no, more than that. Jeez, it's like 15 years later, whatever it was since that show went off the air. So I think in a situation like that, you get away with it, right? But here – I mean, yeah, she hasn't been on Impact in a while, but she effectively was playing herself. I mean, that's what she was doing. So to bring her back in a totally different role to me just doesn't make any sense. You know, it would be like – it's the same reason why in wrestling you don't recast the same character – with a different guy. I mean, you can do it with a – like WWE did it with Sin Cara, right? You can do it with characters that are under a mask. But if Eli Drake doesn't resign, they're not going to have someone else play Eli Drake. There are television shows that will do that. So, like, I think the rules are a little different, and that's where it just doesn't add up for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to fill your – Roseanne pointing, Mike, it had been a whopping total of 21 years.
Was it really? Wow.
Roseanne had been on there.
That's crazy. Yeah. So even, I mean, obviously, when's the last time Winter was on TNA television? It was probably 7 years ago. So
yeah.
Triple the amount of time.
I wouldn't have as much trouble with that. Like, say when Velvet Sky first debuted in the company, or maybe it was Angelina Love, they went by a different name and they came back as Angelina Love. Like, that's fine. It, you know, shows up a few times, but she held the championship. Like, she's in their lineage. Yeah. And this company goes to great lengths every week to show us 10 minutes worth of, hey, this match happened 10 years ago. Go buy our stuff. So just bizarre. At least mention that it was Winter and now she's Katarina. She doesn't want to be Winter anymore. I don't know.
I mean, that's all it takes. Yeah. I mean, we've seen WWE do that and acknowledge – I mean, they don't do it right away, but we've certainly seen them acknowledge the fact that people have played previous characters. Like, it's not like it's a big secret. So I think all it takes is Josh Matthews doing exactly what you said, just saying, hey, she wants to go by Katarina now, but obviously fans will know her as Winter, and then that's it. Just acknowledge that it's the same person and you solve all the issues.
Do you think, and this could be the case for all I know, but do you think that management thinks by bringing her back as Katarina, which is her actual given name, that this is, oh, we're just being kind enough to let her use her real name so that she doesn't have to be stuck with the baggage of playing the voodoo priestess lady like she was last time?
I mean, yeah, that could be. I mean, it seems like they're in such a mode right now of just letting wrestlers own their own characters and everything else. It's possible that she just said, look, I just want to be me, and they were fine with it, which like Andrew was saying, I think you can do just acknowledge that she was someone else before, and there's nothing wrong with that. And now she's going by this different name, and that's it. You acknowledge it once and then you never have to acknowledge it again.
Yeah, it's like even when Tenzai first reappeared in WWE, they alluded to that he was in the company before.
Yeah, good yeah. Point. Yeah,
there's something like that.
And my final question for this week is also something that Mike brought up earlier. Why do you think that we've had this unfortunate transition for KM from a muscle-bound, meat-headed bully into a bad Tony Robbins / Diamond Dallas Page motivational speaker workout guy?
I don't – I mean, it kind of seems to me like they're just trying to do something with Falaba, which – it's fine. I mean, people love Falaba. He gets reactions. So I that's what it feels like. Like, I don't even know if it has as much to do with KM as it does, has to do with we want to put Fall of Bar on TV because people seem to like him. Yeah, I mean, Andrew, what do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to my theory of Dimmor's terrible humor. Like, he just finds, he gets a kick out of it. I mean, KM could be worth more. They've given him some stop and start pushes. Like, they gave him vignettes when he first started. He was in America's top team. They gave him a little something. And then it keeps getting taken away. He looks like a jobber. Yeah, he's just like a comedy guy now. So, I mean, the opposites attract, and Dimmor is having a good chuckle. Which, whatever it airs.
Yeah, I mean, which is unfortunate because I thought him and that bully character that he played. This is going back several months now that kind of reminded everybody of Biff from Back to the Future. That I thought worked, you know, I thought that was some good stuff. And then, there were elements of comedy to that, but it wasn't all the way. Whereas this is obviously, you know, all the way comedy. He's eating an ice cream while he's making Fall of Bar do cardio.
Yeah. I like that because he was kind of like unhinged, even though there was the comedic element, and now that's all gone. And it's just comedy, which comedy can only get you so far in wrestling, as you've seen with Grado and Joseph Park,
as we've seen many times before. Yes.
Yes.
Well, that's it for this week, guys. See you next week.
All right. Have a good one.
Sounds good, Colin. Thanks for the call. All right, we're going to get back to more phone calls at 515-605-9345. We've got a lot more people on the line. We're going to get to everybody. So again, 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number 1. That's going to put you on hold. We've got to take a quick 30-second break. That's all it's going to be, 30 seconds. We'll be back in just a second. We'll get to more of your calls here on the PW Torch Livecast.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
All right, right back to the calls on a busy night here in the live cast. Ryan in Maryland is up next on the phone. Ryan, how are you?
Good. First question I have for you is I'm getting to a show this weekend where Kong Ed Kong is the world champion of this federation called American Pro Wrestling Alliance, which is based somewhere out in West Virginia. So my question is, how many of these Impact superstars hold a world title in a smaller promotion on the face of a tiny promotion like this?
That is an excellent question. Of the ones that I know of, so Kongo Kong is there. I know KM and Fall of Bar both, I think, are big parts of is it WrestlePro, right? The company in New Jersey that they've partnered with in the past.
And yeah.
I'm sure there are others. Off the top of my head, though, I don't know of any off the top of my head. I'd have to go we could definitely go through the roster and look and get a better answer for you next week. But, Andrew, any off the top of my head that you can off the top of your head that you can think of?
No, I can't. Yeah, those are the two that are kind of popping out to me right now.
I think doesn't Phantasma have a belt in AAA, I believe?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he's a current I believe he's a current champion. And yes, Phantasma is the reigning AAA Latin American champion. So there's one there, and he's obviously a pretty big part of that promotion. And then I'm just scrolling through the rest of the roster. Obviously, Austin Aries has what a dozen belts on him or whatever it is. Yeah, I'm sure there's more. I mean, I think Ryan, I'll go through the roster this week, and we probably can get a better answer for you next week.
Okay. Yeah. Second question for you is Allie getting possessed by Sue Young? And when was the last time that her female possessed another female on professional wrestling television?
Yeah, Andrew, what did you think of that segment? If you missed it, Allie was in her dressing room. There was a knock at the door. She opened the door. It looked like a type of voodoo doll or something that kind of looked like Rosemary a little bit. It had a note pinned to it. She took the doll in her locker room or in her dressing room and unpinned the note and read it. We didn't see what it said. And then she kind of twitched. That's the only way I can think to describe it. She twitched in the mirror a couple times before that segment went to a break. What did you think of that segment with Allie? Where do you think that they're headed with that? Because obviously they told the story last week of Rosemary getting shoved into the coffin by Soo Young and Allie being forced to watch it while Rosemary didn't want her down there to begin with. And now next week, I think they said that they were going to have there was going to be a segment next week of Rosemary's funeral. So that will be obviously another chapter in this story. But what did you think of the video package this week, and where do you think they're going with it?
I thought it was okay, but I mean, I guess my big complaint is, oh, so was Rosemary dead or what? Are we just not going to talk about this tonight? Because they went to such great lengths last week, and they even mentioned it on the Twitch show that they had. I don't think she'll get possessed, but I think, I think she'll have to go find Rosemary somewhere. I don't know where they're hiding her or break her free. But in the other question of when was the last time a woman was possessed by another woman, probably Winter with Angelina Love, I would guess.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a really good point. Speaking of someone we were just talking about. I agree. I don't know. I mean, I kind of figured that they want to keep Allie a babyface. So I would imagine that maybe she'll, you know, if they're telling a supernatural story here, she might be under somebody's spell. Maybe Soo Young will have, you know, given her or possessed her or put her under some spell for a couple of weeks. But ultimately, I think we'll see Allie come out and be the babyface because I still think that's where they want to go with her. I just don't know that she has the look to be a heel. I mean, she'd have to almost change her entire look to even attempt to pull off a heel character.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind them trying at this point, but I don't think they will anytime soon.
I have a question for you on Brian Cage's opponent in Noah. Does he have one of the better physiques in Japan? Because typically, these Japanese wrestlers aren't built like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought so too. And I know he's highly regarded in pro wrestling, Noah. I believe he's actually in management with the company too. I'd have to confirm that. But he's a pretty big deal over there, which is why I think the match was also booked the way that it was. Cage, you know, didn't bulldoze through him in 5 minutes or anything like that. Like, it was a really competitive match, and I think the fact that he was a bigger guy, they could pull it off. And also, I think the fact that he's in management of the pro wrestling Noah. I think that was probably a reason why he was booked to look so strong against Cage too. But yeah, I thought that was a really good match. Andrew, what did you think there?
The match I actually strongly disliked because they didn't build that.
Okay. That's a good point, because he is a pretty big deal in pro wrestling Noah. And I think if you've watched a little bit of pro wrestling Noah, you would know that. But I agree with you. They did not tell you that he was a big deal in pro wrestling Noah. That I agree with.
Yeah. I have zero idea who that guy is. I just don't watch much Japanese wrestling just because I watch a ton of everything WWE pumps out and Impact. I just don't have enough time really. I have no idea who that guy was. So to see this guy without any buildup, without mentioning him this week, last week, giving him any video package, you know, taking Cage, you know, I don't know, 7-8 minutes, however long it was, but beating the crap out of him for a little bit, I think that hurt his mystique quite a bit, as did last week's match. But as for his physique, I will also say that I'm just not too familiar with New Japan or pro wrestling, no, unfortunately. So he looked pretty buff, though.
Yeah, I think he's definitely one of the bigger guys. I mean, also, not just like in terms of muscle mass or anything, but I think he's pretty tall, too. So I think he's just one of the bigger guys working over there.
And do you think that Fall Ball will actually lose any weight and get a better definition on himself? Or do you think this was just mainly played up as a joke with KM?
I think it's totally played up as a joke. I think, KM will continue to eat ice cream while Fala Bob passes out trying to do cardio. Andrew, do you think I'm wrong, or do you agree that this is all just a comedy act?
Just comedy, because especially since they're taping one show after the other. Like, I don't think
good
lose
point.
Too much weight
yeah.
wait in that time.
He'd probably die.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't hurt him to lose a little, just so he could, you know, speed up a little bit in the ring, and I guess probably for his overall health. But yeah, just I think it's just for comedy at this point.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call. We got more calls to get to, and let's go up next to, I don't have names on either of these numbers, unfortunately. Ooh. So let's go first to 626. 626, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, my name is Matt. I'm calling from Bakersfield, California.
Hey, Matt. How you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. Gentlemen, just to reflect on your couple of questions you talked about earlier, one with Kylan about a character coming back and playing a different character. It made me think of the fake Deezer, the fake Diesel and the fake Razor that came back in 96.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, like it's happened. And, but, you know, I think the big difference, like Andrew pointed out, is just they weren't champions. You know, like if fake Diesel was a world champion and then he came back as Kane later on without him. I mean, it's a little, and that's really not even an apples to apples comparison because Kane had a mask on, so you can hide it. But let's say he came back as, I think Isaac Yankum was after the fake Diesel. So if fake Diesel comes back as a former world champion and then comes back as Isaac Yankum and there's no explanation, then I think it looks too weird. But obviously, just to a lesser scale, you know. But no, you're right. I mean, and it's happened with other guys too, for sure.
Doink.
Yeah, there were like seven different doinks. And again, you can hide it with the face paint. You know, just like they are on two or three different Sin Caras at this point. I think just two, right?
Just two. Yep.
Yeah, but again, like you've got a mask on, so you can hide it, so you don't really see it.
Yeah, and I believe on commentary they were like, "Oh, he's buffed out and gotten tattoos."
Yeah, I think they did. They had to acknowledge the tattoo because he didn't have a tattoo 1 week, and then he did the next week.
Yeah. And then another thing I wanted to bring up was with the gentleman that just called about the Ali and Rosemary deal. I wanted to ask, apparently, I don't know too much about them, but apparently they go by like Demon Bunny. So the way that I took it with the whole skit was, that like somebody delivered, you know, Rosemary's soul to Allie, and like that's why she kind of twitched, because she kind of felt her, like, you know, Rosemary's you know, body like taking over, and she could have come out like a Rosemary and maybe attacked Soo Young.
Yeah, that's actually a really good call. I know. Yeah, they've wrestled. They've kind of used that Demon Buddy thing on the indie scene. I think they've alluded to it a little bit in Impact too. But you know what? Now that you bring that up, I could absolutely see something like that happening.
All right, cool. And then one thing, I don't know if you heard Josh, he referenced that Kelly Combat, the California Combat on tomorrow on the app. And what I remember about that event, I didn't attend, but I don't know if you remember at the time. A wrestler came out and he spit his gum at a little girl, and then the dad just like started pounding on him from behind. But that California, that, it happened at that event. So,
no way! Oh, I hadn't heard about
show that. Or this was back in March, right before WrestleMania.
Oh, interesting.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, I hadn't heard about that. So a guy had come out and spit his gum at like a kid in the crowd, like a little girl, and then the dad kind of went nuts because of it?
Yeah, I think he was just trying to, you know, heal it up.
And sure, yeah.
I don't know, you know, but I think the gum came out accidentally, you know, but I don't know, you know. You don't know someone's motives or mind.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Still, I mean, yeah, I wonder if they put that on there. I would imagine. I mean, who knows? Maybe. You never know. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I hadn't heard of that, but I'll have to find footage.
Oh, and then the last thing I wanted to bring up was the WWE Network promoting the WGN app. Did you guys hear about that with a table for three with, of all people, Shane McMahon?
Yeah, I know, of all people. Yes, no, we were that was something we were actually going to talk about later on. But yeah, no, absolutely. If you missed it, No, if anyone out there missed what we're talking about, the table for three, I think it was Shane, AJ, and Kurt Angle, I believe, and they had aired some Impact footage. Yeah. WWE wanted to use some of Impact footage of AJ and Kurt in Impact, and as a courtesy or as a thank you, they plugged the GWN app on the table for three, and from what I understand reading some things today, it helped considerably. The GWN, their downloads in terms of app rankings with Apple and Google, I would imagine, and anywhere else, skyrocketed. So they went from, I think, I want to say, and I could have these numbers wrong, so I thought I read that on the Apple side they were like ranked 1,200th overall in app downloads or something, and it went from 1,200 to like 105 or something overnight. So clearly that not only was a big thing, but it helped them get some downloads too, it would seem.
Yeah, I thought it was like really cool that, you know, that they did that. And I also too, I read that earlier today that the app did rise after the following of the announcement and stuff like that. So I just thought it was cool. I wish they would do that more. You know, like, I don't see why, you know, like, it's us against them. You know?
Especially, yeah, from WWE standpoint, I mean, no one is even close to being on the same level. So if you're WWE, I mean, why wouldn't you just try to help the business out a little bit by throwing some of these smaller companies a bone? Because really, there's no one's even close to competing with them. So, I think it makes sense. It both sides benefited from it, right? WWE was able to air some footage that they didn't own, and Impact got their app plugged at the same time. So it seemed like it was a mutually beneficial situation.
I mean, they used to do that back in the day, or not a lot, but the Royal Rumble, how they paired up with AAA, I believe. They have the NWA shows? I mean, not shows, title defenses.
Yeah, they absolutely
even Cornette
did. Yep.
With the Smoky Mountain.
Yep, they would have Smoky Mountain matches. ECW with cross promoting. That's a good point. Yep, and then the Royal Rumble, they would bring in international guys. You're right. They'd bring in, like, in the mid 90s, especially, they would bring a lot of international talent in for the Royal Rumbles, and they would tell you where they came from. You know, they would be like, "This is so and so from New Japan Pro Wrestling," or "This is so and so from AAA in Mexico." Like, they weren't shy about acknowledging the fact that they weren't alone. They were obviously with WCW, and I get that. But now that there's really no competition for them, I think they're doing the right thing by trying to help these other companies grow a little bit. Because at the end of the day, like, if Impact is better, it's only going to help cultivate more talent that at some point WWE is going to be able to sign and utilize. So it makes sense for them to try to help out as many of the smaller companies as they can. And I wouldn't be surprised, too, if that's a Triple H thing. Because I think we're seeing a lot more of that type of stuff, the more influence he has.
Oh, no, that's cool, man. That's cool. All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you very much. And you have a nice evening.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, you too. All right.
Yeah, you too.
515-605-9345 is the number. ImpactLivecast@gmail.com is the email address. And we got more calls. So let's go. Do we need a break? We should. But you know what? We'll hang on and go to one more call. Let's go to 631. 631, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, guys. This is Jason from Long Island, 10-plus-year VIP member.
Thanks for calling, and thanks for being a VIP member.
How are you all doing?
Doing all right.
I only caught the end of this show tonight, but from what you're saying, it sounds like I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yes.
But I did have kind of a bigger picture. As two guys who've watched more Impact than probably 4 out of 5 mental health professionals would say is healthy. what does it feel like when you turn on SmackDown, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, and you see a huge onstage confrontation between AJ and Samoa Joe?
Yeah, you know, that's a funny one. It was 2 weeks ago because I was on Wade's podcast after SmackDown that night, and we talked about it. And it was one of the questions he asked me, like, hey, you've watched Impact for a long time. You cover Impact for the website. What goes through your head when you see that type of segment happen with those two guys? And Andrew, I don't know if you're any different. To me, it's like the first thing that comes to my head is just blown opportunity, because that was – and yeah. It's not that AJ and Joe weren't big deals when they were with Impact. I mean, when they were with TNA, they were central figures. But, you know, I think you see how they're presented now. And, you know, I've said this a lot, but it goes back to Dixie Carter. Like, if Dixie just had better management in place, and I think it starts with her, they could have used those two guys and built something that would have been sustainable instead of something that had, you know, the bottom fall out of it. So, to me, my first thought is blown opportunity, and it kind of it's unfortunate because they had clearly an opportunity to do something pretty big with those guys. That's maybe unfair. They did do some big things with those guys, but I think they could have done those things on an even bigger scale had they had proper management involved. Andrew, what goes through your mind when you see guys like that, specifically, you know, like he said, that Styles Joe segment where they're now a featured part of SmackDown?
There's almost like a little bit of bittersweetness there. Like, I'm happy for these guys. But I mean, they left Impact, which is, you know, been watching for many years. And I wish that they had been able to take Impact to that next level. That's what I'd been hoping for all those years. I saw those two main event a house show in St. Cloud, Minnesota, in front of 350 people, maybe 10 years ago. I mean, it's crazy to see them there. But at this point, like, Joe almost feels like a WWE guy to me, just because when he ended his TNA run, he was in the Beatdown Clan. He was like the third most important guy in that group. Whereas on the other side, AJ kind of meant more, and he disappeared to kind of New Japan Ring of Honor. So he's still kind of like an Impact guy to me. But it is different. It's a lot of like different thoughts. But overall, I am happy for him. But it is also kind of surreal at times, too.
Yeah, it just feels so frustrating to watch because there's no Samoa Joe pulling a knife on someone, no AJ pretending to be Junior Ric Flair. It's almost mind-boggling at times.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, not just with those, you know, individual storylines, but you think back to like 2005, 2006. People looked at Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, and they were like, okay, these guys are some of the best wrestlers in the world. And they're on TNA. And you're right. I mean, they don't have that guy right now. I mean, that has become Ring of Honor. It's become, especially New Japan. I mean, I kind of feel like if 15 years ago, you know, Kenny Omega's doing what he's doing in Impact, if this were 15 years ago. And we're talking about how, hey, this is the most underrated guy in the world, and you can only see him on Impact. They don't have those guys right now. You're absolutely right. They just don't.
Feels like Trevor Lee is the one that they're wasting the most.
Agreed.
100%.
To me.
Agreed. Yep.
I really didn't want to make you guys ugh this badly, but another question. But my other question is, since they have so many Lucha Underground guys on the show now, do you think that there may be any crossover to the fourth season of Lucha Underground? I know only one of you actually watched the show. I really enjoy it. It's strange because they've got such far out storylines, but they do follow a pretty solid wrestling structure. I mean, they've built characters over there that I don't think any company has done. I mean, I believe Mil Muerte is this killer, and I believe Phoenix is cooler than three quarters of the WWE roster. Like, is there any way they could cross over or maybe get some of their television talent? I mean, it seems like their presentation is almost more important than the actual wrestlers they have.
Andrew, what do you think there? I will admit, I started at season one. I think I'm about 3.5 episodes in. I fell asleep, unfortunately, because it was like 3 a.m. when I was watching it. But yeah, no, I like what I've seen so far, and I'm 3 episodes in, so I don't want to analyze too much yet. But what do you think there? Because I know you've seen a lot more of that product than I have.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see much crossover. I mean, except for like Jeremiah Crane is over there, but I don't know if he's in both. Sami Callihan, Jeremiah Crane. I always want to call him Solomon Crow. Anyways, he's there. But I think they've almost wrapped up filming, and it seems like this pairing didn't start until kind of after that happened. So maybe season five, we'll see more of that. But after tonight's show, I'm kind of wishing that it doesn't happen, because Lucha Underground to me is so much cooler. I don't want kind of this, the awfulness of Impact over there at the moment. That's just like the fan in me speaking. But I think Impact has definitely been influenced by their presentation, because they're doing a lot more of those backstage segments with dramatic music. They're using all those camera angles. But I agree that I like that stuff. But I think it's not working as well in Impact, due in part to the announcers being aware of it. Whereas if you watch Lucha Underground, the announcers don't know what's going on backstage. They don't ever see these videos. So in Impact, when they cut to these videos, it doesn't really make any sense, because they're obviously post-produced. So it's just kind of a different world they're throwing to that. It always feels kind of off to me.
So what you're telling me is I'm not going to see Dario Cueto anytime in the Impact Zone.
Oh, I wish. I really wish.
He's literally the only heel general manager I think I've enjoyed in the last 10 or 12 years.
I'll go 20 on that. Well, I'll go back to Bischoff. So 15 years. I don't know.
That's pretty much where I drew the line to. Yep. Anyway, all right, I don't want to take up any more of your time. Sounds like you got some crowded phone lines over there. But I really enjoy your show. I mentioned that to Wade in one of the emails I sent. I actually enjoy your show more than I enjoy watching Impact.
Oh. Well, it's good.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
we appreciate it.
Call back.
And I did mention to him that I hope you're getting hazard pay for this duty, because it can be rough some weeks.
Yeah, it was a rough one tonight.
It definitely can be. But hey, we appreciate the call.
All right, have a good night, guys.
Thanks, you too. Yeah, sometimes it feels like a chore, I'm not going to lie. Which is what I find most funny about it, Andrew, is because like people will say, and I've gotten emails and people on Twitter that are like, oh, you guys are too negative. And I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, I would love for the show to be great, because, and I've said this before, you and I spend 2 hours watching it every week, and then somewhere between an hour and a half talking about it. So every Thursday night, we're investing 3.5 hours on this stupid show, and I would love for it to be great, because there are weeks where, honestly, like, not to offend anyone here, but there were weeks where it feels like we're wasting our time. This week kind of was close to that. Luckily, I would say lately the positive has outweighed the negative, but this episode in particular was a little bit of a negative, and maybe more than a little bit.
Yeah, very much a negative. And what was so frustrating is, you know, people do say we are negative, and yes, we are probably more negative than positive, because the promotion hasn't been that good. Pick your year, you know, go back 15 years if you want, whatever. But, you know, Redemption was really good. And we were both really high on that show. The week after that, the week after that, and then tonight, bad. So it's tonight really frustrated me, just because I once again had high hopes for this company. And I keep doing it over and over and over, and every time they let me down. It's still better than the Jeff Jarrett era, but tonight was a train wreck, and it was awful.
All right, let's go to a break, because I said we were supposed to take one the last time. And then when we come back, you'll go through the stuff on the show we haven't talked about yet. And we've talked about a lot of it, but we'll go segment by segment and kind of hit on any of the stuff we've missed. So we're going to do that right after a break here on the PW Torch livecast.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
All right, let's go and run through this episode of Impact Wrestling. Like I said, we've hit on a lot of this stuff, but not all of it. Before we do, you know what, Andrew, quick thing. And not to vent a little bit, but before we do that, have you listened to any of Eric Bischoff's 83 Weeks podcast yet?
I listened to probably 40 minutes of the Finger Poke of Doom today and then probably half hour of his first episode.
Do you find it as annoying as I do about how he just feels the need to incessantly rip on wrestling media?
He always does it.
But it's like,
yeah,
come on, just shut up. Because you know what? If you were to listen to him, every single thing in the history of the world that has ever been reported on has been false. And it just screams of – the thing that I find highly, highly hypocritical about it is he blasted the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD – with that WWE did, because he was like, oh, it's revisionist history. And he uses that term all the time. He loves the term revisionist history. He absolutely loves it. And is he not doing the same thing? Because, again, like, all he's doing is taking reports and telling you about he's very clear in his memories when he's telling you about how one of Wade's reports or one of Dave Meltzer's reports was dead wrong. He remembers it like yesterday. But Conrad will ask him details on something else, and he'll go, oh, you know, I don't really remember. I'd have to go back into what my mind was at the time. Like, he's very cloudy on certain details, except for when it comes to wrestling media reporting on stuff he was doing in WCW. That stuff he remembers clear as day. The other stuff that you can tell he might not want to answer, all of a sudden he's, you know, he's, oh, well, you know, I'd have to go back and why did I make that decision? I don't know. And he misremembers things or whatever he likes. I mean, I don't know. I find the show interesting. I mean, just like with Bruce, I find it informative. But it does kind of feel to me like he is, I don't know, being a little unfair, I guess, and I'm obviously biased, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm not, but it just seems a little hypocritical to me that, especially when he so clearly remembers how wrong, you know, reports were about him, but he's so cloudy on other details.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah, I used to cover his show now and then, Bischoff on Wrestling for PW Podcast, and it was driving me crazy because 75% of his answers were just like, I don't remember. And so, and you're exactly right. But he'll go after reporters nonstop for reporting things that he doesn't even have a good memory of, which he also admits. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. You know, one other thing, kind of to go off of that drew me from that show or that annoyed me, is that he placed so much blame on WCW going under, on Turner and the restrictions put on him. But like, WWE has shown us over the year that you can make a PG show and people will still watch it. He takes no responsibility for crappy booking. It's all just the people above him, and he's been doing it for 20 years now. It's just insane.
And I don't think that it's all wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, right? Like, yeah. if Fusion bought WCW and Jamie Kellner was willing to keep it on the air, it might still be around today. I mean, that deal died because they killed the television distribution. So I don't think he's completely wrong, but I agree with you. I think he's way too quick to pass the blame on the people above him. When, yeah, in terms of the death of WCW, I think that the people above him had a lot more to do with it than he did, per se.
Yeah,
but
for sure. Yeah.
The decline of the death of WCW and the decline of WCW are two different things. The death of WCW was Jamie Kellner pulling the distribution off the table and killing the Fusion deal. That killed WCW. The fact that Turner didn't want wrestling on their network killed the company. But the decline of WCW, the fact that they were going from whatever it was, like 5 ratings and 4.5 ratings to 1.5 ratings, that was booking. I mean, that had nothing. The show was still on live every week on TNT. Nothing about the landscape of the show had changed, with the exception of WWE show was booked better and more people were watching it. So the decline of WCW to me is 100% on booking, and not all of it was him. I mean, some of it was Russo, but the death of it, I think, was different. I think he leans on that too much. I think he not uses it as an excuse, because I think it was a big reason why the company died. I think it's the reason why the company died. But I think that he doesn't make enough clarification between the two, because there's no debating the fact that at one point the show was way up here in terms of viewership and ratings, and then 2 years later it was way down here. Nothing had changed. The time slot didn't change. They didn't start taping their shows instead of being live. Nothing changed, with the exception of the booking was bad. And I don't think, like you said, that he gives or he accepts enough blame for his hand in that. And it wasn't all him, but I don't believe that he accepts enough of the blame for the booking that started the decline.
Yes. Yeah, because his entire thing in that sense before the death was like, well, they made us be PG. And I understand that's going to take away some of your hardcore male fans who want to see blood. But you can bring in kids, you can bring in families. And it just his booking was awful for a couple of years. That's always frustrating. Maybe he owns up to more later in the episodes or anything. But there was a lot of spin from what I was hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to get and too I far would, off track, but I mean, like, they also never built any new characters. I mean, nobody, heard Jim Ross say it, and he's right. There's one guy that got over, one new guy that got over in the history of that company was Goldberg, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit and those guys, they got over, but they did more in Jericho, but they were doing more, they got over more in WWE than they did in WCW. I mean, they were mid-card guys in WCW that came to WWE and then exploded. And yeah, you know, Booker T and Benoit, I think at one point were world champions, but they weren't treated like a big deal.
Bischoff too.
Yeah, I mean they made one new guy in the history of their run. They had all these people watching the show. It was the hottest thing on television for a year or 83 weeks, which is a little more than a year. and one new guy came of it, and that was it. I mean that to me is an issue with your booking. And like, yeah, they were where they were in large part because of the fact that they were using recycled talent in Hall and Nash and Hogan and everybody. But you would think that over the course of those 83 weeks, they would have been able to make more than one guy. And I'm not saying like make them to the point of Bill Goldberg, who is a Hall of Famer, but you would think that they would be able to create more main eventers than the one guy that they did. Because even the Giant, I almost want to say that he was treated like a main eventer, but in a weird way. And
he was right away. Yeah, he was right away, and then he kind of moved down a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I've worked out in our basement. We have a treadmill in our basement, and I decided that I think I mentioned this a couple of months ago that I've been watching Nitro from I started with the episode of the Scott Hall invasion the first week. I don't know. I think that was like in June of 96, and I think I'm somewhere in July or August at this point. but yeah, the Giant, like in mid 96, when he was the world champion, he was almost Braun Strowman. I mean, he was squashing guys in world title matches every week. He was beating Earthquake. I forget what he was called in W. The Shark.
Oh, was that Shark?
Yeah. So, like, there was one week where he squashes Shark in like 3.5 minutes, and then he beats Scott Norton, I think it was. I mean, they kind of treated him the way that WWE treated Braun Strowman like 2 years ago, only they had the world title on him at the same time. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know if he counts. Like, does he?
Well, by the end of his run, and Bischoff will blame this on Big Show Giant that he got lazy, but I mean, his character was his character became that he was lazy and sat in the corner and smoked. You know, use the Paul Heyman of hide the weaknesses. Don't say like, oh, he's fat and he smokes. Like, nobody's going to buy that just like he made Scott Hall a drunk, his character later a drunk. So, yeah, not good with characters. I will maybe give him DDP, but who was also happened to be his neighbor.
Yeah. No, but I think that's fair. You're right. I think that's fair. And Sting, Sting was a big deal before he got there, so you really can't give him credit for Sting.
Glacier?
Glacier. Maybe the Crow. I mean, Crow Sting was pretty cool, but that everyone seems to give credit to Scott Hall for that.
He did, yeah. He came up with that character. So I guess to maybe like tie this into TNA a little bit, when we were talking about this a couple weeks ago and how he would have potentially, you know, taken over creative had they signed with, oh God, who was it that was going to buy?
Was it Viacom? Paramount?
Viacom?
Yeah, Viacom.
Yeah, I think TNA, yes, they would definitely be in better spot right now. More people would be watching, but Bischoff would not have helped them grow at all. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it all, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It would be interesting if he had learned from the lessons of WCW at all. But we won't know. You know, we just will never know.
Yeah. I just will point to Garrett Bischoff getting a big push and Rob Terry getting a big push.
Yeah. I don't have a comeback to that. I have no retort. All right, let's. I don't want to go too far down the WCW rabbit hole. Speaking of making myself mad. Let's see what in this episode of Impact have we not talked about? We talked about the opening tag match. We talked about Grado. We talked about the four-way for the number one contender for the X Division title, although not much. The four-way for the X Division, the four-way number one contender match, Hijo del Fantasma wins, so he's going to face Matt Sydal at some point for the X Division title. I thought this match, I mean, we talked a little bit about this earlier. I thought that this match was good and was just hurt by commentary. I mean, it went 17 minutes.
Wow.
And granted, that included a commercial break, but that's long, even for Impact, which tends to air longer matches. I just thought that this match was good and suffered from the lack of emotion on commentary. Did you agree?
Yes. Yeah. Josh Matthews sounded like he was at a funeral for this one. And man, Errol Starr like almost killed himself jumping over the top. I did make this note, though, and I want to complain once more, if I may. Why were these four guys selected for this match? Because last week they did a six-man X Division match and Desmond Xavier, Andrew Everett, and DJZ were on the winning team. Errol Starr was the one got pinned. So any sort of logic, why were any of these guys in the match? It might be a small point, but it's like if you're watching a match, I think things should matter the following week.
You would think.
Yeah.
You would think. No, I agree. I actually had not thought of that, but now that you bring that up, I'm in total agreement. If nothing else, it should have been those three. Granted, two of them are a tag team now, but still, if you weren't willing to put those guys in a number one contender match, maybe have them lose last week. Like, if you don't want DJZ and Andrew Everett to take the pin, then fine. Like, have Desmond Xavier take the pin, and then put those three guys in the number one contender match and add Ishimori, and just say, hey, Ishimori has earned a spot in this match because XYZ. Come up with something. Yep. Make something up. You talk about other promotions. Say, hey, you know, this past weekend in wherever he was, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, Ishimori beat so-and-so, and that earned him a spot in this match. I mean, make it up. Who cares? But, yeah, give us a reason. I'm a big believer in that. I think if you watch sport or if you watch, like, and I bring this up a lot, the UFC comparison, but if you watch the UFC, they don't just randomly pick guys and put them in title eliminators. You know, they generally are top-ranked guys in the division, and there's a lineage, and not a lineage, but there's a logical progression in story, and you can follow it, and you know, okay, this guy's won four matches in a row, or this guy's won five fights in a row. Now they're going to meet. The winner's going to get a title shot. Like, it's not hard. And yes, it's legitimate, but it's legitimate sport, but it's easy to follow. And wrestling, in cases like this, tend to veer off the road in a big way.
Yeah, it's just really lazy writing, and every wrestling promotion seemingly is plagued with it. Because if this was any sort of real life, Desmond Xavier, that's what we would be wondering. Like, oh, I wonder how Desmond Xavier feels about this. What's he going to say about it next week? Why wasn't he in the match? But that's not a thought in anybody in creative's mind. It's just, let's pick these four guys, have them fill 17 minutes, and Fantasma will win. Like, it doesn't matter who's in the match. So it's just frustrating. It's kind of like insults your intelligence, because I say this almost every few weeks, but no other show would do that to you. Things that happen in scenes and movies and TV shows, they matter. They matter the following week if it's any sort of drama or continuing show, but wrestling doesn't do that quite often. Some people might think it's nitpicking, but it would make the show that much more enjoyable if they paid someone attention to their details.
Oh, you know, Andrew, no one cares about the matches. That's what Vince Russo tells me. Nobody cares. DQ, Schmeq. Nobody cares about the matches. It's all about the little skits. Bro.
you needed about 20 more bros.
That's true. There. I needed to throw in at least a dozen more bros.
yes.
Bro. Every sentence starts with bro. That's the one thing.
Bro. How is he not self-aware of that?
Bro.
Or he must be, but how? Yeah.
One thing, bro, is I don't know.
God, I understand, bro.
I listened to a shoot interview. I actually was just poking around on YouTube, and somebody had a shoot interview with Vince Russo up where they had like a bro meter or like a bro count.
Oh, wow.
And every time he said bro, first of all, I had to turn it off. Because every single time he said bro, it would go ding, ding, ding. And in like the 6.5 minutes that I listened to, I think he said bro like 38 times or something. It was insane.
Ow. I would have guessed 300.
Like six, every other word out of his mouth was bro.
It's, yeah.
And he's he doesn't even live in New York anymore. Doesn't he live like somewhere in the middle of the country?
I think he did. I wanted to say Colorado. That's what. Yeah. Ed Ferrar is out there, but maybe Russo is too.
Is he really?
I want to say it's somewhere out there. Yeah.
What does that do? Do we know what Ed Ferrar does now?
He actually is a writer. He teaches a college course on writing.
Oh, okay. I knew he was a teacher. I didn't know where. Yeah. I knew he was teaching college classes somewhere. I had heard that. I didn't know if he was still doing that.
He may have moved. I mean, this was college. I just don't keep close enough tabs on Ed Ferrar. But at one point, he was teaching in Colorado, I know.
Well, what did he write before he worked for WWE?
He was on Duckman, I believe, an old USA show that was on late at night with Jason Alexander as a talking duck.
It was. Was that Jason Alexander, really?
Yeah, he was the main guy.
No way. Did not know that. I remember Duckman. I remember being a kid and seeing advertisements or commercials for Duckman during like during Raw and stuff. But I did not know that it was Jason Alexander.
That was George Costanza. God, yes. Yeah. Blanking on his Seinfeld name. There we go.
I'm a very big Seinfeld fan.
Oh, it's great.
I can quote. I could probably. I mean, I don't want to try to do this because I probably could do it, but I could probably do an entire episode of the live cast just in Seinfeld quotes.
I think that'd be fantastic, actually. That'll be our highest rated
I think I could make it work where I could actually respond to people just in Seinfeld quotes and make it make sense.
Wow.
I think I probably could. It drives my wife crazy because I'll pull out random ones and like really obscure ones. Like if you're a deep Seinfeld fan and I just yelled out randomly, or you had to break up with you, like, let's say somebody broke up with their girlfriend and you asked, it's because they weren't Latvian Orthodox. People would have no idea what you were talking about. But George Costanza had to break up with a girl because she broke up with him because he wasn't Latvian Orthodox and he was going to convert.
That is a deep one. I don't know that one.
That was also the same episode where the Latvian priest found out that Kramer had the Kavorka. See? I'm telling you, it's weird.
Wow.
We don't need to go need to go down this road because we'll never come back.
Maybe on like the 20th anniversary of the show going off there.
Yes.
Like next year.
Yeah.
Or this year it might be.
It might be actually. Was it 97 or 98?
I think it was 98.
Yeah, I think it was. So another weird I'm going to go down a sign. I'm sorry if you don't like Seinfeld. I apologize.
We're at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Go for it.
John Panette played the guy who's got carjacked in the final episode of Seinfeld. Big, like heavy comedian. John Panette is from my hometown and went to the same high school as me. And he was like, I'm dead serious. And he was like the big like celebrity from the school. Like his picture was up on the walls and everything. Like it was a pretty big deal. And I think I was a freshman in high school when that aired. And it was like a big deal that he was in the last episode of Seinfeld. And then I remember he came back and did a comedy night. It was like a fundraiser for the school, like the following year, and just went on and on about how, I don't know if he was ripping people. I wasn't there, but I remember hearing stories about how he was just like telling everybody what a horrible experience it was to work on the last episode.
Really?
Of Seinfeld. Yeah. But he was, from what I understand, a very funny guy.
Wow. That's insane because like back then, just 20 years ago, I'm sure like 60 million people watched that show.
Yeah.
Whereas, that's that final episode. So he was seen by a great portion of the country.
He was.
Whereas,
he died a couple of years ago, but he.
He
had a. He actually had. If you want to, if you're a fan of stand-up comedy, look up John Panette. He had a few DVD specials, a couple of Comedy Central specials that were really good. Most of it, he's a big guy, so most of the comedy was about food and him trying to lose weight, but which are things that I can identify with. really funny guy. I like his stand-up a lot.
I'll look him up. Pinett?
Pinette, I believe.
Oh, there's – all right.
So, I'm scrolling through here. There's not much else that we have not talked about on this episode. We've talked about most of it. But actually, oh, you know what? In all this Seinfeld talk, we had another caller come in. So let's let's go to one more call before we wrap up the show. Let's go to 310. 310, you're up next in the live cast.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I'm literally just tuning in now, so I'm not sure what you're talking about, but if you let me know, I can probably chime in.
We went down a Seinfeld rabbit hole. Yeah, we went down a Seinfeld rabbit hole.
So feel free to go Impact or Seinfeld questions.
Yeah, exactly. Or about how much Eric Bischoff misremembers things about WCW. We talked about that.
Well, that's we have 17 years to watch that. I'm more a WWE fan than an Impact fan. I haven't watched Impact for a few weeks. Are you guys specifically talking Impact? Are you talking wrestling in general?
We are talking anything, so feel free. Whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, I think just watching the thing that's fascinating me right now is just watching WWE stock go through the roof and just watching how good they are at running their business and how bad they are at booking wrestling. And I just keep wondering, of all the people investing in this stock, watching it go up, you know, that are doing it for certain business reasons, do any of them actually, like, it's just wild to watch this product and watch just, like, the dumbfounding decisions that just continuously happen week after week after week. And like, I'm definitely not someone who cares anymore about the turns Roman Reigns heel thing that much. But the first thing that has actually like kind of made me raise an eyebrow on it again, because after being numb to it for like 2.5 years, is just the storyline they're trying to tell, where like management doesn't want him to succeed. And part of me thinks like they have to just be doing this to be trolling us, but like they're not. They're not, because you know Vince McMahon is just kind of thick and insulated. And so I don't know, just that pay-per-view on Sunday, just sitting down and watching it. I know like these are kind of the dark times normally, like, you know, the May to August times, but like that was just still, it's the chant of beat the traffic, which was just like, I don't know how they're defending some of the booking choices at this point, because it's like, it's starting to border on like real silence in these main event matches rather than like, I guess, action. And it's just like a weird human, forget wrestling. It's just like a weird human experiment to watch someone so successfully build his business while just making like such comically terrible choices to the core pieces of, like, theoretically the core pieces of the actual business itself. But you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think we are watching an old man go insane. Like, that's the only explanation I have for this, because you're right. I think the idea, honestly, and this is as simple and as dumb as it can be, I think the whole thing here is like someone at some point over the last month told Vince McMahon, hey, the reason why they're not buying into Roman Reigns is because they think you want him to be the man. So Vince's idea is just, well, we're going to tell him that he's not, that we don't want him to be. And like, that's just, it turned on a dime. And honestly, like, I think someone in a booking meeting or in a writing meeting at some point after WrestleMania just told Vince, like, Vince probably said, why are they buying in a Roman Reigns? And someone finally just said, it's because they think that you want him to be the guy. So Vince's reaction to that is just, well, we're just going to tell him, we're going to tell people that he's not our guy. And that's just, I mean, it's obviously dumb. I mean, we saw the reaction on Sunday. I'm at a point, I don't know about you, Andrew, I'm at a point where it's like, I don't even get upset about it anymore. I just laugh. Like, I watched that pay-per-view on Sunday, and I saw that it was going on last, and I said, okay, Joe's going to win the match. I mean, excuse me, Reigns is going to win the match, and then he did, and then I just laughed. Like, I can't even get upset about it anymore because I'm just going to drive myself insane.
I actually found, like, you kind of find yourself thinking the things that, like, your parents would tell you, like, I'm not even mad, I'm just disappointed, right? And the other thing that I think that's really, the thing I think, and not to bring, like, politics into this too much, but the thing, the only reason I am is because I never really truly believed that Vince McMahon was as insane or ridiculous as people said that he was. But after watching Donald Trump be president for over a year and realizing that Vince McMahon and Donald Trump are basically the same exact person, I now literally believe anything someone tells me about Vince McMahon. Like, anything that someone tells me, I'm like, yeah, okay, I could probably see that.
Yeah.
And so I just feel like this presidency has made Vince McMahon make so much more sense to me. And I actually find wrestling much more entertaining now because it doesn't anger me anymore. I'm more just like, wow. I can't believe that must actually be occurring. And so it's fine. I mean, like, you know, there are, I think a SmackDown at least kind of loaded the deck and can become a much better show. And Raw is just, I don't know how they're planning to get through 3 hours of Raw weekly with this roster for the next year. I think they're going to have to do something drastic around the 4 to 5 month mark of this, because I just, like, I mean, you're like, you've buried Kevin Owens, Jinder Mahal, no one wants to see him on their television. Like, it's, I don't know how they're going to put on 3 hours of television a week with that roster, West, that's built around Reigns, who no one likes, has no strong heels, has Seth Rollins, who's hot.
90 seconds.
You know, doesn't have really anyone to feud with. Balor's cooled off. Like, I don't know how you put 3 hours of television on a week with that.
I don't have an answer. I mean, I'm in total agreement. Yeah, there's not a lot of depth there. It's SmackDown has the deeper roster, in my opinion, at this point, and they have 1 hour less per week of television to fill. So, like you said, yeah, good luck to them.
60 seconds.
Andrew, do you agree? I mean, where do you kind of see, where do you see Raw going? I mean, I'm not really sure there's many places for them to go other than more Roman Reigns. You know, you brought up Jinder Mahal, and oh God, I hope we don't. I hope that's not where they go. But you know, at this point on the heel side, like, really, I think he's right. Like, where, who else do they go to as a heel?
Bobby Lashley, maybe they'll. I mean, Bobby Roode. Yeah, they'll try for a little bit, but those are just short term options to feud with Roman Reigns. I think the brand split is gonna. It's starting to die. It'll be a long death. It'll probably be like a year or so, because that's what happened the first time. They started, you know, just having all guys on all shows. And then eventually they had these super shows where SmackDown guys would show up on Raw, and then it would just happen every single week. So I think it'll be last for another
10
year
seconds.
And a half. But I think it's slowly on its way out.
I mean, I like the idea, honestly. Like, if you can hold yourself to it, I like the idea of the brand split.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But you need to make sure your rosters are balanced. And the big thing that's going to hurt Raw for the next year is they're pushing the wrong guy. I mean, we all know it. Braun Strowman should be the guy that they're strapping the rocket to, and they're not going to do that. So that show is going to continue to feel, I think, sluggish compared to SmackDown, that now has AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan and Nakamura and The Miz and Samoa Joe. I don't see any way how, like, we're not looking at SummerSlam and thinking that SmackDown is the far superior show. Like, it might not reflect that way in the ratings, because I think people watch Raw out of habit. But, you know, you look at, like, we talked about WCW earlier. WWE had the far better show. Raw was far better than Nitro for 8 months before it started beating it in the ratings. Like, it could be the same thing, where less people are watching SmackDown, but SmackDown is by far the superior show.
Yeah. I don't think Vince would ever let it get to that point. Like, he would just switch guys back from SmackDown over to Raw to fix those ratings.
So a TNA question quickly, I guess a place that I could actually put this in. The Lashley interview, because you just popped that back into my mind from Monday. After seeing this guy be, like, probably one of the lone bright spots on TNA for the last 2 years and totally, like, reshape what I thought about him, could you believe that sit-down interview Monday? I was just sitting there when it ended with, and one more thing, I'd just like to say hello to my sister. I love you. I was sitting there like, come on. It's like, they have to just be messing with us right now. Like, either this is, but you know they're not. You know that this might lead to a bad, you know, he might turn into an actual heel, but you know what they did there was on purpose. They're not trying to make him a heel. They tried to make him a babyface, and it will probably accidentally turn into him being an actual heel. But just like, did they not? It's like they haven't. It is almost as if they haven't watched one thing this guy has done in 10 years. And they just are bringing him back in as, like, essentially the same character he was before? Or even worse, though. Like, I don't know. I was dumbfounded watching that Monday.
Well, I think you're right. I think if anyone has watched Lashley over the last however long it's been, like 8 years, 9 years that he was with TNA, or even when he was with WWE before, if you look at Lashley and you say, okay, what's the weakest part of his game? What's the thing that WWE, if you're WWE and you're in a booking meeting, what's the one thing with Lashley we should try to hide? Well, the weakest part of his game is probably his promo. So I know, we'll give him an interview segment. Like, okay. It's like they're just not self-aware enough. Or they're not that they're not self-aware enough. They're not. All right, well, I don't know what happened there, so apologies to the caller. Some technical difficulties. We kind of got booted out of the show, and we're over our time allotment, so I can't restart it. So to the caller that was on the air with us, I'm sorry. Call back next week. But we were talking about Lashley. Andrew, what did you think of that interview segment with Lashley on Monday? Because, you know, as I was saying before we got cut off there, it seems like they took the guy who's biggest weakness was his talking and decided that the way to get him over was to put him in an interview segment because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. When I watch WWE, a lot of times I just have this weird sort of detachment to it because I've seen so many thousands of hours of it. But while watching that, I was like truly uncomfortable over how bad it was and awkward. And Lashley, so I'm with you that he's a weak talker unless he's a heel.
Yes.
And unless you kind of let him do what he wants to talk about, which Impact let him, they're not overly scripted there. But yeah, this was really weird. And I mean, him talking about his sisters beating him up and tying him to a tree and him shoving a towel in a bully's mouth. It was just this weird, long, over-rehearsed, overthought, rambling, embarrassing, awful promo. I don't know why they just didn't have him. One, they should have just shot the entire thing again and then just, you know, take the interesting clips and then get rid of the 99% of the stuff that was just awkward and awful. I don't know why they didn't do that. They're just, I mean, Wade has talked about it a bit, but Lashley is just, he's dead in this company. And it sucks because we've been talking for a year of that he would be interesting in, you know, potentially interesting in WWE to have some good opponents, but man, he is nothing. Like, the crowd doesn't care. The crowd doesn't want him there. Really unfortunate, I would say.
Yeah. We've gone off on many tangents tonight, but the one thing that came through my head when I saw that Lashley promo was, you know, we talked about how I can quote Seinfeld, well, I can quote movies too. And I wanted to, from the principal in Billy Madison, just be like, Mr. Lashley, what you've said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard. How did the quote end? Everyone in this room dumber for having listened to you. I mean, that's basically what came through my head. I was like, that was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. It was just incoherent rambling. Like, nothing made sense. I'm not sure that there was a rational thought in there, at least not to get somebody over the baby face. And maybe not. I mean, maybe we're not giving them the benefit of the doubt, and maybe the whole idea was we're going to get him over as a heel with this. But I don't think that was the case. I think the case, I think the effort was to try to get him over as a babyface, and it was not well received.
Yeah, and if they are Yeah, and if they are trying to get him over as a heel, just have him pick somebody up and power slam him. Like, beat up Braun Strowman.
Yep. He's a big dude immediate. Who can fight people, so, yeah.
There are, yeah, many easier ways. It's just some weird tone deafness. It's not... And it sucks because, like, Roman Reigns is so not cool. Like, you know, most people don't like him. Bobby Lashley is not cool. As a heel, he's kind of cool because he beats people up and talks a good game. But, yeah, they're not using people to their advantage, much like Bobby Roode. Yeah, not good.
All right. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's episode of the Livecast, which is now no longer live because of our internet issue?
I don't think so. Awful episode of Impact for people that are just listening to the.
Oh yeah, Impact. That's right. Show. Impact, the thing we usually talk about. Yeah, awful, really bad. So that I think that's probably why we went off on so many tangents. There just wasn't much to say. There wasn't much to say about this episode other than things that just didn't make a whole lot of sense. So we'll see what they do next week. I mean, what do they advertise? They advertise Eddie Edwards against Callahan in House of Hardcore.
In House of Hardcore.
For which Sammy Callahan needed to remain employed or else the match apparently wouldn't have been able to happen
in a different promotion. Yeah, Brian Cage's world tour of 8-minute matches in another country.
He's going to be in Canada next week, so the very exotic land of Canada.
Yeah. Wow, I wonder what Canadian hero he will take on next week. Can't wait.
How exotic and luxurious that he is going to be in Canada.
They went all out on this one.
Mystical, mysterious place on your world tour to be visiting Windsor, Ontario.
Yeah.
that looks exactly like Detroit. I mean, I'm not sure really what else there was. It kind of just felt like a watered-down wrestling show.
Yep. Disappointing. Not good.
And that, I think, sums it up as best as we could. Disappointing and not good. Hopefully it's better next week because, like we said, we have spent, you know, if you really go on time, the last 3 hours and 40 minutes either watching or talking about this show. So if it wants to get better next week, I don't think either of us would be upset about that for those that think we're too negative.
Right. Exactly. Or we'll just talk. We'll talk about Seinfeld next week, too, if it gets too bad.
We could just do that. Yeah.
The Seinfeld cast.
Yeah. The Seinfeld cast here on the PW Torch. The PW Torch Seinfeld cast where we talk about wrestling only in Seinfeld quotes. All right, I think that'll do it for this week. I don't have any VIP plugs to play because, again, we got kicked out of the live cast and the time allotment was over. So, sorry. I'm sure they can plug in some VIP plugs, though. So, if you're listening to this, you are probably going to hear VIP plugs because you're listening to it on the VIP feed in the podcast feed. So, hopefully, they can add some plugs in. If not, in case there are no VIP plugs, I'll just tell everybody to go VIP. Like, come on, stop wasting your time. Go VIP. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a lot of different stuff. You're going to get me and Andrew on our VIP after shows most weeks. We're not doing one tonight, but we do one most weeks. You're going to get the Bruce Mitchell audio show. You're going to get the Fix with Todd Martin. You're going to get Sean Radican shows. You're going to get the daily Wade Keller hotline. You're going to get everything that comes along with being a VIP member. You're going to get VIP exclusive columns, more audio than you'll be able to listen to, honestly, way more audio. And then you'll be able to listen to, but it's all really, really good stuff. So if you're not a VIP member yet, you 100% should take the leap and you should do so. One of our callers tonight said he was a 10-year VIP member. 10 years.
Wow.
I will be, when did I subscribe? I'm over 10 years. I think it was 2007 when I first subscribed. So I'm more than 10 years.
I don't want to break here, but I think I'm close to 20.
Look at you.
Seventh grade.
See? And and I think if you listen to the show, you know that Andrew and I are pretty smart people. So we would not be steering you in the wrong direction. You should go VIP if you're not. Again, you can go to pwtorch.com/go VIP. That'll give you all the details on how to go VIP. And if we're able to plug in VIP plugs, even though we're off the air, you'll hear Wade tell you more about VIP in just a second. But I think I hit on the big ones, which is the Wade Keller hotline, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, the Fix with Todd Martin, the WWE Future Past show with Sean Radican. I think they also had some New Japan and Ring of Honor roundtables up this week, I believe, as well. So a lot of stuff for VIP members. If you are a wrestling fan, if you are listening to the show, you obviously are, you should 100% go VIP here at pwtorch.com. So that'll do it for this week's edition of the Livecast. For Andrew Socek, I'm Mike McMahon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. I think we broke a record with the number of calls tonight. We had a what, 7 or 8 phone calls, whatever it was.
All right.
Great night for calls. So thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you next week as soon as Impact goes off the air here on the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.